We're talking about Christmassy stuff for the next few shows, and I thought we would talk about Die Hard, which I consider a Christmas movie, and over the years has been widely considered by most people and accepted as a an annual viewer for a Christmas movie. I've got 30 cold hard facts about Die Hard. One, it's got a literary background. The movie is based on Roderick Thorpe's 1979 crime novel, Nothing Lasts Forever, which was a sequel to his 1966 novel, The Detective. In 2013, Thorpe's long out-of-print book was resurrected to coincide with the film's 25th anniversary. Yeah, and I always, whenever I watch Die Hard and I see that credit, I always find it kind of weird. I don't know why. Based upon the novel by Roderick Thorpe. I'm like, what are you talking about, really? The movie was inspired by, the book was inspired by The Towering Inferno. The idea for Nothing Lasts Forever was inspired by the 1974 disaster flick Towering Inferno. After seeing the film, Thorpe had a dream about a man being chased through a skyscraper by a group of men with guns. He eventually turned that snippet of an idea into a sequel to The Detective. Frank Sinatra got first dibs on playing the role of John McClane. You guys know this? This is a true story. Because he starred in the big screen adaptation of The Detective, Frank Sinatra had been offered the role to its sequel, and at the age of 73, he smartly turned it down. That'd be a little different movie, right? Don't you think? 73-year-old Frank Sinatra as John McClane?
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
He could do everything, right?
Yeah. Welcome to the party, pal. That's my Frank Sinatra. The good Frank Sinatra. I know you guys just thought Frank Sinatra came back from the dead.
I turned away and thought he came into studio.
Here's an interesting little coinky-dink. Bruce Willis's big screen debut was with Frank Sinatra. In 1980, Willis made his film debut in the crime thriller The First Deadly Sin. He has no name, and if you blink, you'll miss him, but the role simply required Willis to enter a diner as Sinatra's character left. So there's a little coincidence right there. Clint Eastwood planned to take a stab at the part originally. It was Clint Eastwood who owned the movie rights to Nothing Lasts Forever, which he planned to star in the early 80s, but he didn't do it. It was never supposed to be a sequel to Commando. This is one of the most popular internet stories about Die Hard, but according to Steven DeSouza, the screenwriter of both Die Hard and Commando, while there was a sequel to Commando planned, the only similarity with Die Hard was that they both took place in buildings. According to DeSouza, Escape Plan is the closest to his original Commando 2 idea, and Die Hard was never supposed to be anything but Die Hard. Sequel to Commando? What does that mean? It would have been Schwarzenegger playing McClane? No! Bruce Willis wasn't even the studio's third choice for the role. If Die Hard was to be a success, the studio knew they needed a bona fide action star in the part. So they set about to offering it to seemingly a never-ending list of A-listers at the time. Rumor has it. Get this list. Are you ready for this? Get this list of people. Sylvester Stallone, Harrison Ford, Robert De Niro, Charles Bronson, Nick Nolte, Mel Gibson, Richard Gere, Don Johnson, Burt Reynolds, and Richard Dean Anderson, yeah, MacGyver, were all considered for the role of John McClane, and they all declined it.
Dang.
MacGyver declined John McClane. What?
He had better things to do.
They're probably going to make him cut his mullet. They should have offered it to Will Forte and then had MacGruber play the role, and then Bruce Willis was considered a comedic actor at the time. That's true. Die Hard's producers had nothing against Bruce Willis, of course. He just wasn't an immediate choice for the role because up until that point, he was known solely as a comedic actor, not an action star. Following the success of the film, the action genre really became Willis's bread and butter. And although he has two Emmys for his comedy work, it has remained such to this day. I remember the first time I saw Die Hard, I was really skeptical. You know what I mean? Big action movie, and I'm like, the dude from Moonlighting? Really? The dude from Moonlighting? Come on. I have to say that Die Hard, you know, if we were to go back and talk about, like, genuinely being surprised, you know, at a movie, like being really surprised by a movie, Die Hard is way near the top of that list of me being completely blown away and surprised by it. Because it, you know, it's like, look, a big dumb action movie, big 80s dumb action movie, and it's got the dude from Moonlighting in it. God, is this going to suck? And of course, it turned out to be awesome. I told you guys the first time I saw Die Hard, it was a rough cut. Have I told you this?
I don't think so.
It was a rough cut. There were no credits at the beginning. They screened it like up 2 months before it came out. I don't know why they invited critics, but they were like, hey, come on, it's a work print, but we're going to show it to you. And it had the score from Aliens in it. It didn't even have, it was scored with other movies. There were other movie, because the score wasn't done yet. And it was, you could see the marks on the film where the edits were taking place, where they marked it with a pencil. Yeah, and it still kicked ass. It wasn't in full like stereo sound. It didn't have all the special effects. The photography wasn't complete. And you know, it had the score from Aliens in it, and it still kicked ass. It still was great. And then when I saw it in all its glory, you know, like in 70mm and Dolby, please. Yeah. And we talked about how it was Alan Rickman's first movie, which is incredible. That was his first movie. his first movie, one of the most iconic characters ever. Boy, Alan Rickman was good. Man, he was good. Okay, we got to take a break, and then more facts about Die Hard, and then we've got a pop-up video you heading your way as well. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower. 2 for Tuesday, yeah! 312-981-7200, 630 area code requested. Lord, that's perfect places. All right, we're talking about one of our favorite Christmas movies, Die Hard, and I've got some little-known facts about Die Hard. And, yeah. And let's see. When they released the movie, Bruce Willis was barely even seen on the movie's posters because the studio marketing gurus were unconvinced that audiences would pay to see an action movie starring the funny guy from Moonlighting. That's funny. It's exactly what I said. The original batch of posters centered on Nakatomi Plaza instead of Bruce Willis's mug. As the film gained steam, the marketing materials were altered and Willis made a more prominent look into the promos. Willis was paid $5 million to make the movie. That's a lot of money for an unknown quantity right there. Bruce Willis suggested that Bonnie Bedelia play his wife. Good for you, Bruce Willis. Bonnie Bedelia, she's so good. Bruce Willis was able to say yes thanks to a well-timed pregnancy. The first few times Willis was asked to star in the movie, he had to say no because of a commitment to Moonlighting. But then co-star Cybill Shepherd announced that she was pregnant because her pregnancy wouldn't work within the show. Producer Glenn Caron gave everyone 11 weeks off, allowing Willis to say yes. How about this one? Sam Neill was originally approached for the part of Hans Gruber. Sam Neill! Neill ended up turning the film down, and then in the spring of 1987, the casting director saw Alan Rickman playing the dastardly Valmont in the stage production of Dangerous Liaisons that they knew they had their Hans, and then it turned out to be his first movie. You gave us that little fact yesterday, Dan.
I did.
John McTiernan, the director, turned the movie down too, not just once, but on several different occasions. His reason was that the material just seemed too dark and cynical for him. The original screenplay was a very grim movie. On my second week working on it, I said, guys, there's no part of terrorism that's fun. Robbers aren't fun bad guys. Let's make this a date movie. And they had the courage to do it. McTiernan, the director, sees it as a Shakespearean tale. In the original script, the action in Die Hard takes place over a three-day span, but McTiernan, inspired by Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream, insisted that it be condensed into a single evening. What? Wow. Nakatomi Plaza is actually Fox Plaza. Yes, the corporate headquarters of 20th Century Fox, the very studio that released the movie. It was the perfect location for the much-needed Nakatomi Plaza. And it was still under construction. There wasn't a whole lot they needed to do to make the space movie-ready. Let's see. That panoramic view of the city below, it's not real. The 380-foot-long background painting provided the illusion of a breathtaking city view in the movie. It was a state-of-the-art one, too, with animated lights, moving traffic, and the ability to change from night to day. The painting is still the property of the studio and has been used in other productions since. Oh, so you don't get that kind of view when you go to the Fox Plaza. People will be very disappointed. The film's success spawned a bona fide franchise. It had four sequels and spawned video games as well and comic books. John McClane's tumble down a ventilation shaft was an accident, or maybe error would be a better word. But in the scene in which McClane jumps into the elevator shaft, his stuntman was supposed to grab the first vent, but he missed by a lot, which made the footage even more exciting to watch. So the editor kept it in the final cut. Alan Rickman's death scene was also pretty scary. At least it was for Rickman. In order to make it look as if he was falling off the building, Rickman had to was supposed to drop 20 feet onto an airbag while holding on to a stuntman, but in order to get a genuinely terrified reaction out of him, they dropped him on the count of two, not three. Oh, so that look on his face. Oh, man, what a dirty trick, man. Oh, man. Bruce Willis, because of the movie, suffered permanent hearing loss. What? See, that is a little joke.
It's funny.
Thank you very much. In order to get the hyper-realism that director John McTiernan was looking for, the blanks used in the guns were modified to be extra loud. In one scene, Bruce Willis shoots a guy through a table, which puts the action star in extremely close proximity to the gun, and it caused permanent hearing loss. He referenced the injury in a 2007 interview with The Guardian when asked, the most unappealing habit, due to an accident and the first Die Hard, I suffer 2/3 partial hearing loss in my left ear, and I have a tendency to say, what? Alan Rickman wasn't fond of the noise either. Whenever he had to shoot a gun in the film, Rickman couldn't help but flinch, which forced McTiernan to have to cut away from him so his reactions were not caught on film. Gruber's accent, American accent, was nothing but problems. The scene between Rickman as Gruber when he slips into an American accent and pretends to be another hostage who got away was insisted on by screenwriter Steven D'Souza, who wanted them in the room together to duke it out. But McTiernan was never happy about with Rickman's American accent, saying, all I hear is Alan Rickman's English accent, so I was never happy with the way when he opened his mouth in that scene. I shot it three times to try to get him to sound more stridently American. It's odd for someone with enormous verbal skills, but he just had trouble getting the American accent. I think that's a great scene. Hans Gruber's German is mostly gibberish, and the bulk of the German cohorts were not German either. Bruce Willis, on the other hand, was actually born in West Germany. Jeez. Oh, all right. Bruce Willis has 4 feet. As Willis spends much of the movie barefoot running through broken glass, he was given a pair of rubber feet to wear as a safety precaution. If you look closely during certain scenes, you can actually see the fake appendages. By the way, the rubber feet thing, I pointed out when I screened this movie a couple of years ago during Christmas time, and you can see it, man. If you go, especially on the, because we screened it on the big screen, you know, it was digitally remastered on the big screen at the Movie Co. And you can see, you can tell, look at the rubber feet on Bruce Willis.
Are they like hobbit feet?
Yeah, they're gigantic and hairy. You can see but not touch John McClane's sweaty tank top. In 2007, Willis donated the blood-soaked tank top he wore in Die Hard to the National Museum of American History at the Smithsonian. I didn't know that. That's cool, man. You know, it's funny. We went to the Smithsonian, my friends and I, when we went to D.C., we went to the Smithsonian. The first thing we did was, like, you know, we walk in, there's all this amazing stuff. We're like, where's Archie Bunker's chair and Fonzie's jacket? That's all we want to see. We could have added. Yippee-ki-yay stole the movie, and it's a simple line, yippee-ki-yay blank, but it became the film's defining moment. And the credit for the line is owed to Willis in a 2013 interview with Rion Seacrest. Bruce Willis admitted that the yippee-ki-yay was really just a joke. It was a throwaway. I was just trying to crack up the crew. I never thought it was going to be allowed to stay in the movie. So there it is. Facts about everybody's favorite Christmas movie, Die Hard. Dan, is the jet here?
Yes, it is.
Are you all right?
No, I was just, I thought you were going to go to one of the Die Hard sequels on the jet action there, so.
Oh.
You're fine. You're good.
Okay, we're good. All right. Yeah, we're going to do a little pop-up video. Skip Skipley will be here after the news, which is next.